Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Makone Maja. Let's get into the news of today, and man, we went from there not being that much going on to there being a lot going on. And of course, our top story today is the, I don't know what word to use to describe it, riveting, entertaining, traumatic, depending on your point of view, interaction between Donald Trump and President Cyril Ramaphosa in the White House. Donald Trump basically went at Ramaphosa in what was clearly a sort of planned attack. It's been described in the media as an ambush, which I think is kind of silly because you could sort of see it coming a mile away, playing a video compilation of Julius Malema and Jacob Zuma singing Kill the Boer and, you know, the horrible racial stuff, you know, calling for the not calling for the killing of white people yet, et cetera, et cetera. All the infamous things those guys have said, and confronted Ramaphosa about it. And Ramaphosa tried his hardest to look friendly, to be diplomatic, to tell jokes, to be sweet. But he looked to me, I think, that he was a bit out of his depth. He sort of flailed around. He tried to reorient the conversation onto trade, onto, you know, investment, things like that. But, you know, as per Trump's style, it was quite informal, quite chaotic. We heard from a variety of voices. That was what was really funny about this was, you know, you had all these media right in the room with them. You had Trump kind of holding court, dictating the flow of things, not letting anyone get a word edgeways in when he wanted to talk. And then you heard a couple of comments as well from just sort of other people in the delegation. We heard from the president of SATU, Ms. Losi, who, you know, wanted to tell Trump that really actually we were treating these farmers a little bit too well because we were paying too much for farms that the government was taking, which you sort of... Then you had Johann Rupert, clearly in that room because he really thought that South Africa needs Starlink. You had John Steenhuisen jumping in, trying to do a delicate thing of, on one hand, defending the country, trying to improve our relations with the Americans. On the other hand, wanting to kind of pin Ramaphosa, you know, put him in a position where he couldn't break the GNU and sign up with the EFF and MK, sort of doing this balancing act of not trying to look like a snitch, but at the same time also, you know, kind of put pressure on Ramaphosa. You had Ernie Els, who, as far as I could tell, the you know, master golfer was just there because he's a patriotic South African and he wanted the thing to happen and the country to succeed from it. He's, you know, he's apparently responsible for a lot of organizing the meeting, at least according to Johann Rupert. So you had so many fascinating, weird dynamics. I don't know if anything actually came of this meeting. There's some suggestion that there was more in-depth, detailed trade negotiations and debates behind the scenes, but nothing has been announced, so we don't know quite yet what may have happened. Makone, I've talked a lot about this on the Center for Risk Analysis YouTube channel in the past 24 hours, so I'm going to try and shut up now. What was your takeaway on the whole thing? I mean, there's like 1,000 threads you can pull on here. Give me your thoughts.
So there's been a lot leading up to this, Nick, that began when President Trump took his enormous media spotlight that follows him and just shown it on South Africa and highlighted some of the most heinous acts that happened in our country. And since then, we've been experiencing South Africa from the lens of the international media, from the perspectives of Americans who are hearing a lot about what's happening in South Africa and are like deeply shocked and find the things that happen are like ghastly. But for us, it's everyday life. It's sort of become normal. And that was the feeling that I got when I just heard President Trump ask for the lights to be turned down and suddenly Kill the Boer, the song, was ringing through the speakers of the White House, loudly being sung and projected in that room. It was so embarrassing. I was incredibly uncomfortable just, again, experiencing South Africa through the lens of America, through the lens of the highest office, the most powerful office in the world, actually, the office of the President of the United States. I think that hopefully that begins a change in tone and posture in South Africa to issues that we sort of normalized, that we should have never really normalized, and the levels of violence is certainly one of those things. So I think I'll go
Can I come in on that point in particular? I mean, that was one of the really weird things about the meeting. If you actually go and watch the whole thing again, basically most of the discussion was Trump saying, are you committing a genocide against white people? And almost everyone in the room saying, no, everyone is being murdered at a shockingly high rate, which is not really a defense, is it?
No, doesn't make it better. That's the thing. We're saying people are dying. Yes. A lot more than you think. That was essentially what we were saying to President Trump.
70 a day.
Yeah, likely that number wasn't shouted out, but it really is a disgrace what's come of the state of South African affairs. As for the president himself, I thought he was exercising good judgment in steering the conversation away from, you know, emotional bursts. You know, like, he seemed to me to be exercising a lot of restraint at defending his position, defending this issue of a white genocide, defending the Expropriation Act, which is indefensible, defending a lot of the policies that Trump takes issue with. I thought he was exercising.
Well, I mean, was he defending them? Because he sort of just kind of said, expropriation without compensation. I mean, it's such horror. Our constitution protects all of our rights. And I thought that was really, really exposing, is that on that stage, he didn't actually have a defense of so much of government policy. And so for a moment, President Ramaphosa became Saint Cyril again. He was suddenly a non-racial liberal out of nowhere. We haven't seen this Cyril for a long time.
The defense for me is when he said, well, this is part of our land reform process where there were these dispositions that happened in the past and now we're redressing those issues that we're still dealing with today. I thought that was where the defense came in, which is obviously very misguided. The Expropriation Act is, of course, not an instrument of land reform, although the ANC keeps hijacking it as a tool for that. So I thought he himself was very good at trying to de-escalate and mitigate the situation, just control for a very unpredictable Donald Trump and say, let's not do this in front of the cameras and the whole world. Let's take this to the back where we can iron these issues out. I thought my expectations were that it was going to be slightly chaotic, but that if Ramaphosa tries to continually defend himself, then it wouldn't end well. I already had seen that Marco Rubio was saying that South Africa has issue after issue with the United States. So we were already off to a bad footing. And I was also hoping that Elon Musk and J.D. Vance would sort of stay out of it as you know, Trump, the people who quickly come to Trump's defense if they sense that he's being disrespected, as we saw with the Zelensky sitting. With John Steenhuisen, I thought he was excellent. I thought that John did exceptional at saying, President Trump, we are the government, not them, pointing to the people chanting kill the Boer. Those people represent a fringe group in South Africa. They are not government policy. And we've been in opposition.
He used the wonderful word rabble. He described them as that rabble.
That rabble, yes. he said, listen, we have had to put our differences aside because we recognize that South Africa needs us to show up as a united front to confront these issues, including the level of crime that you're highlighting. But they do not speak for the South African government. I still don't think Trump was convinced. Trump strikes me as more of a relationship-based leader rather than a fact-based person. You know, you can present him with all the data. I don't think he'll care. In the end, he will defer to his favorite golfing champion, South African golfing champion, Ernie, to hear what he has to say. And for him, that's more of a reliable account, I think, because of those relationships that have been formed there. So I thought John Steenhuisen did very well. I've seen that people have been dissatisfied with him. They thought that should have been a moment for him to seize, you know, and assume leadership and distinguish the Democratic Alliance from the ANC. I don't think that would have made Trump trust him either. So it wouldn't have served him anyway.
And the other thing is, on the South African domestic stage, you know, while I think a lot of people who are very anti-Ramaphosa would have been very happy to see him say, but Mr. President, you are taking away people's property without compensation, that would have probably looked really bad for a lot of South African voters who are, I think, quite patriotic. And he would have looked like basically like a schoolyard snitch.
Including Trump. He takes issue with Republicans who are anti-MAGA, right? I think he would have looked at Jen Hazen with some suspicion. I don't think he would have elevated his stance before Trump's
and presence. So, I agree completely. He was actually quite deft at sort of saying, well, you know, look, we're in this government. Ramaphosa has made this deal with me. And if he doesn't, like the sort of implied thing was, and now he can't go back on this. He can't break this alliance with us because otherwise those people will get in power. And then, you know, it's open season on South Africa from the US's perspective.
And I think he also did a good job of breaking up that. We'd covered this on the show recently where the ANC was saying the DA is our enemy. Because when it mattered, the DA saved the ANC and covered their backside. So I thought he was very diplomatic, proved himself to be a leader and stood up. I don't think he was showing loyalty to the president, but loyalty to his country. And I think that's what Johann Rupert was there to do as well.
So this was a dynamic we were talking about in the pre-show discussion about how South Africa is this kind of, like, if you view this whole interaction through the lens of a very dysfunctional family, like that doesn't really get on, going to court together to try and, you know, present a united front to like a judge or someone who has the opportunity to make our lives much more difficult. And through that context, even though the delegation wasn't on the same page, even though it's clear that Ernie Els, I don't think, really was expecting to be called upon for his opinion on these matters. He was just, you know, he wanted this meeting to happen, but he was, I think, a little bit surprised that suddenly he was, you know, going to be a voice of South Africa. Yes. Which he did well at. I mean, good props to him for all of that. He's proved himself to be a true patriot. You had the kind of more responsible family members, shall I say, in the form of like Steenhuis and else, kind of covering up a little bit for Ramaphosa, which was both very dysfunctional and also strangely sweet. I don't know. Am I being too romantic?
I wouldn't call it covering up for Ramaphosa himself. So I would chalk it up to the famous quote.
But backing the country.
Yes. Loyalty to your countrymen always and to your government only when they deserve it. Something along those lines. And I took John Steenhuisen's and Johann Rupert's attitudes and postures to be that of trying to protect what would have cost South Africans particularly a lot had those negotiations not gone well, right? So I welcomed their stance.
We still don't know if they've gone well or not, unfortunately.
So far, the rand's been stabilized. That's what I've been. That's been my metric for monitoring whether this has gone well or not. But yeah, that would be my assessment of them. I wasn't sure why the COSATU president needed to be in that room specifically.
You could see Cyril was not comfortable when she started speaking because she sort of almost kind of, I think, sunk the whole thing by sticking to a lot of much more traditional ANC lines on these issues. Although at the end of the day, you know, you had COSATU who are normally talking about driving the capitalist dogs out of saying, no, but we want more direct foreign investment. And that for me was the funniest dynamic of the whole thing was how Cyril and even COSATU were suddenly just all these principles they claim to uphold, this whole revolutionary chic, and they just threw it over the side of the ship to suddenly pretend like they were kind of non-racial Democrats who just, you know, wanted to grow the economy at odds with so much government policy. But it was kind of funny, I think, in that moment to see that, they knew that these were policies that they couldn't put them forward aggressively. They have to do them sort of clandestinely because there isn't really a defense. There isn't a defense of expropriation or compensation. There isn't a defense of NHI. There isn't a defense of the fact that government has allowed crime to get to such ridiculous levels that, you know, millions of South Africans are fearing for their lives every day. There was just, what did you make of that weird, what I thought was kind of an unfair dig by Johan Rupert at John Steenhuisen when sort of halfway through talking about the country, he says, oh yeah, and by the way, the Western Cape, you know, which although it's DA controlled, they don't control the police there. They have the worst murder rate, and he won't tell you that, John Steenhuisen won't.
I was so confused by that moment. He completely threw John under the bus. But I think he was incessant on making the point that violence is widespread and it affects everyone. Just like when he said, I'm their biggest target, referring to Julius Malema and the EFF. And he said, look him up. Just go on Google and in your search bar, say Julius Malema and Johan Rupert, and you'll see all the horrible things they've said about him. I thought he was just hell-bent on making that point that this happens to all of us. And even when I've been the prime target of their attacks, their insults, it doesn't mean me leave the country or accuse them of being or uttering genocidal or demonstrating genocidal intent. I think, funnily enough, I somehow think that's probably bought him a lot more face in the South African public, that he was willing to sacrifice John Steenhuisen to make his point.
Yeah, we were actually talking about this before the show as well, that the EFF has spent years building this conspiracy theory that Johan Rupert is the real president of South Africa behind the scenes, that he's actually controls both the DA and the ANC, and he's got like he's the great puppet master. And then he is kind of condescending towards the ANC, but helpful, I guess, and also mean to the DA on the public stage. It's sort of, I think it really put a bit of a kicking into all of those conspiracy theories.
Yes, he was an equal opportunity offender. He took a swipe at John Steenhuisen, and then he took another one at Lamola, right? So he evened it out. You can say he was being biased. Ultimately, he's coming to the defense of all South Africans to say crime affects us all, and it's terrible. And I think he was trying to make that point even when he was saying, I'm building cottages for my grandkids. I think he was saying in the rural side of South Africa, and I too am concerned about their safety. But not because they are whites, but because rural safety is generally just a big problem in South Africa.
Yeah, yeah. So it remains to be seen whether there's going to be any great sort of economic consequence from this. Are the Americans going to remove tariffs? Are they going to change the refugee program? Are they going to give us some sort of economic deal? Are we going to get Starlink? Are we going to get other businesses from the US? These are all open questions that I think we don't know the answers to yet. But a very fascinating episode, actually, in, I think, South African, that meeting was more interesting, I think, for how the South Africans acted, actually, than how Trump acted. And I think it was a very sort of enlightening moment about, what's going on in our politics in an interesting way. Fascinating stuff. I think we're out of time now because we've gone quite long on this one. We will talk about the budget tomorrow. That is, of course, also very important, possibly more important than everything that just happened there overseas. Things to say about the budget. I would quote that line from the TV series, Chernobyl, not great, not terrible. But anyway, we'll leave that for tomorrow. Thanks, everyone. I hope you had a wonderful or an interesting time listening to us, and we'll see you all tomorrow on The Daily Friend Show. Cheers.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.